The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So today's talk might not surprise you. It's about generosity. And I thought it would be a fitting topic going into the holiday season. On generosity, or Dana in Pali. Pali is the language in which the oldest scriptures were written down in. So Dana is one of the 10 paramis. And paramis is also a Pali word, which is often translated with perfections. And often in the West, we might not really like this translation because it reminds us of perfectionism. But it might come forth out of the time of the Buddha. When the Buddha was not awakened yet, he thought, like, what qualities of heart and mind do I need to develop to attain Buddhahood? And he realized that he had to develop 10 qualities of heart and mind. And to attain Buddhahood, the Buddha realized that he had to actually perfect the 10 qualities, hence the perfections. But to quote-unquote merely attain awakening, it is said that we don't have to perfect the 10 paramis, we just have to cultivate them to the extent that they are supportive for our awakening. So Buddhahood and just the normal type of awakening, which we call arahatship, are a bit different, at least in this tradition of Theravada Buddhism. It's more challenging to attain Buddhahood than arahatship. So luckily, we don't have to perfect all 10 paramis. We just have to cultivate them to the extent that they are supportive for our awakening. And the first of those 10 is dana, or generosity. And I'd like to dive deeper into that topic today, but I thought it might be nice to just hear all 10 paramis in the order that they are named in the suttas. And some of them actually have been talked about by some of the other teachers over the past weeks and months. So I'll also call those talks out. So the first one is generosity, or dana in Pali. The second one is ethics, or ethical behavior, sila in Pali. The third is renunciation, nekamma in Pali. Fourth is wisdom, panya in Pali. And Don Neal offered to talk about that last week. Fifth is energy, virya in Pali. And Liz Powell offered to talk on that a few weeks ago. Sixth is patience, or kanti in Pali. Liz Powell offered to talk about that a few weeks ago. The seventh is truthfulness, satya in Pali. The eighth is determination, or aditana in Pali. And Shelley Gold offered a talk in August about that. So it's been a while, but she did offer a talk about it. The ninth is loving kindness, metta in Pali. And then the tenth is equanimity, or upekka in Pali. And Dawn offered a talk. The talk last week was both about wisdom as well as equanimity. So you don't have to remember all 10 paramis, of course. But in this way, you got a bit of a sense of the kind of qualities that are on this list, or it might have been a refresher for you if you already heard of them. And today, dana of this list. And the Pali word dana, or generosity, refers both to the act of giving as well as the gift itself. In English, it's often translated as generosity. And by giving, by being generous, we cultivate our hearts. It helps us to let go of attachments, clinging, stinginess. And in this way, it also helps us to prepare for the third parami of renunciation. And dana is not only part of the 10 paramis, it also forms together with sila, ethical behavior, the second parami, and bhavana, which can be translated as meditation. It forms the three pillars of our practice. So dana, sila, bhavana, generosity, ethics, and meditation are the three pillars of our practice. And the Buddha would often start his teachings with dana and sila, so generosity and ethics, before he would proceed with any other teachings like meditation. He would first check to see if people had developed these qualities of dana and sila in their hearts before he would start teaching meditation. And in the West, we often start with meditation. And then after some time, we might hear a teaching on dana and sila. So that's actually backwards compared to how the Buddha approached teaching in the back in the day. So, however, it's not too late to start cultivating the qualities of dana and sila in our lives. And in the West, it does seem to sometimes be a little bit of a, more of a cultivation, something that we can develop. That's not not as easy as it sometimes seems in Buddhist Asian countries like Thailand or Myanmar, where generosity is still one of the main practices that people do as they talk about their Buddhist practice. It is something that they grow up with, part of the fabric of society. And it can be very inspiring to spend some time in one of those cultures and soak up the benevolent generosity that people display. And whether it's as a meditator or as a tourist even, you can already feel it. As a meditator, I've seen that, you know, monasteries are basically fully running on dana basis. All the food and the clothing for the monastics and the medicine and the buildings, everything is donated by generous lay people. And often this is not really the norm in the West. A lot of Dharma centers and especially retreat centers, they charge for food and lodging, and the teachings are often, they are often donation basis though. So that's part of the dana culture coming from Buddhism. And there are exceptions, of course, like Goenka centers, as well as IMC, where we're practicing now, and IRC, the retreat center in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Those are exceptions. And talking about IMC and IRC, Gil Fronsdal has set those up to be fully on donation basis. And that's quite remarkable in the West, because other Dharma centers have found that it's necessary to charge for food and lodging, because else not enough donations come in to sustain the Dharma center. Because people are just not so used to organizations fully running on a donation basis. And people often underestimate how much needs to be given to sustain a Dharma center. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it does mean that in the West, the concept of generosity is a little bit differently implemented. So it is clear from dana being the first of the 10 paramis, as well as part of those three pillars of practice, that dana is important in Buddhism. The Buddha mentions in the suttas, "If sentient beings only know, as I do, the fruit of giving and sharing, they would not eat without first giving, and the stain of stinginess would not occupy their minds. They would not eat without sharing even their last mouthful, their last morsel, so as long as there were someone to receive it." So I think this is quite profound. Like, if only we could realize the fruit of giving and sharing like the Buddha does, then we would always offer what we can if there is someone to receive it. And I find that quite inspiring, because ever since I heard this quote and reflected on it, I often try to share part of a meal or something else that seems appropriate to share if there is someone to receive it. I like that sentence that the Buddha added, "if there's someone to receive it," because at first I was thinking, like, how am I supposed to share my meal while I'm sitting here eating alone? But then I realized, like, I guess in this context, it doesn't make sense to share because there's no one to share with. So if there's someone to share with, we can try to share if appropriate. Because sometimes it might be appropriate and sometimes it's not. Like in retreat and we're on silence, it might not be appropriate to offer another yogi some food, for example, because then we're breaking our silence. So that might not be the best way to go. Although in in the retreat center where I was with Sayadaw Uttashaniya, where some talking was allowed at times, there was a habit for people to offer each other food. Like every once in a while, there would be some bread along with the meal. And the meal would be offered by a donor, of course. So sometimes the donor would offer some bread as well. And the Burmese nun that was sitting next to me knew that I liked bread. So she would often offer me her bread. So that was very sweet. And then I knew that one of my friends really liked ice cream. So if ice cream was being served, which was also a luxury every once in a while, someone would offer ice cream, then I would offer my ice cream to my friend. So those are little ways to be generous. But of course, it doesn't only apply to food or meals. It can basically be anything. There's a really nice quote from Jack Kornfield, and it comes from his book, The Wise Heart, A Guide to the Universal Teachings of Buddhist Psychology. And in that book, he says, "Sometimes our generosity is the giving of a smile, silence, listening, warm touch. Sometimes it involves action, time, money, our commitment to justice, our vision for a better world. Every form of giving is a blessing." End quote. So generosity can be anything, as we learn from this quote. Because often we might have this conception of generosity being like giving money or giving time, like a donation to a good cause or volunteering for a good cause. But I really like the idea of that it can be even a smile, you know, just something really simple. Or listening to a dear friend going through a difficult time. Or just giving a big hug. That is all ways of being generous. So it really expands our understanding of generosity. And we might start to recognize that we are already really generous in our daily lives. Through all these little acts of generosity that we might already do, or big acts, maybe. And it's also important to know that the generosity, that dana, has nothing to do with musts and have-tos. And dana is the quality of heart and mind that is free from obligation. And once we feel obliged to give, then we lose part of the purity of giving. And we might still give, and it's still good and wholesome to do, but it's different to give when we don't feel obliged to do so. So, for example, when we give a present for someone's birthday, we might feel obliged because it's a custom. Where when we spontaneously offer to pay for someone's meal when we're eating out with someone, then we might do it out of the joy of giving and not out of an obligation. And dana, in its purest form, is also free of wanting something back. We give out of a feeling of really wanting to offer this to this other being or to this group of beings or organization. And it's not because we want something in return. And of course, that happens that we sometimes have the partial or full motivation of wanting something in return for our generosity. And if that happens, we can be aware of that tendency, which is a very human tendency to want something in return. And we can take that as a sign to further develop letting go and renunciation, to really investigate what's happening in the mind. And this investigation and seeing what's happening in the mind is a process that is, that's going to take a while. These are ingrained habits of mind. You know, the wanting something in return, for example, or the feeling obliged to. So it will need some time to cultivate the quality of letting go. And I love the quote by Tanisaro Bhikkhu. He says, "When asked where a gift should be given, the Buddha stated simply, wherever the mind feels inspired. In other words, aside from repaying one's debts to one's parents, there's no obligation to give. This means that the choice to give is an act of true freedom, and thus the perfect place to start the path to total release." End quote. And this points to how giving can actually be inspiring. It can be something that sparks joy and gratitude in the heart. And that's actually how the Buddha intended it. So when we practice dana, we can practice it in a way that it gives us joy and it sparks happiness, not as some sort of like heavy thing that we also have to do, because then we don't have to do it. Then we just don't do it. And for some people, it means that we might help in a homeless shelter, or we volunteer at the Dharma Center, or we offer a donation in the form of money to a good cause. It can be these kind of things. It can also be to simply talk to a lonely neighbor, or just offer this smile or kind greeting to someone. So, or any of the above, or anything else that might feel generous. It doesn't have to be a huge thing. It can be very simple and very small. Yeah, like the smile or the hug or picking up the phone to call someone. There was this heavenly being in the suttas, and later in the sutta, the Buddha agreed to the statement of this heavenly being, and the being said, "Some provide from the little they have. Others who are affluent don't like to give. An offering given from what little one has is worth 1,000 times its value." So it's not about how much we give. It's about our attitude and how we give. The joy that we feel, the generosity that we feel. And the generosity can feel like an open, warm, and kind feeling in our hearts. It's very wholesome. It's also connected to what I already mentioned, to letting go and renunciation. Because through giving, we let go of stinginess and grasping. And in order to grow in that area of letting go of stinginess and grasping, I've heard a Dharma teacher once say, and I don't remember who it was, and it's also not a literal quote, but they said something like, give as much that it feels like a little bit of an edge. That it feels like an edge to give something, then we are growing this quality of dana in our hearts. So if you're interested in expanding our capacity to be generous and to cultivate this letting go and renunciation, then we can start to find our edge just a little bit. That doesn't have to be like a huge thing, but maybe when you go through your stuff to bring stuff to the thrift store, then you might renunciate something that feels a little edgy, you know, just something you know that's good to get rid of, better for you, but that feels a little bit like a tiny bit of attachment to it, like, oh yeah, but then see what it feels like to actually let go of it. Or if you give it, if you have in the habit of giving a donation to a good cause, like you have a monthly thing set up or something, that you once give a little bit extra, a little bit more than you're used to, and see what that's like. And just reflect on how that will help the good cause, for example, might help to let go as well. So finding our edge will help us to cultivate this quality of dana as well as the renunciation. And the letting go, renunciation, can actually give a sense of freedom. When I immigrated to the US several years ago, I had to let go of a lot of things, clothing, books, other stuff that I couldn't bring, let alone like furniture and stuff, of course. So at that moment, I felt like I was really playing my edge there, like I had to let go of so much stuff. But actually in the long run, it felt really freeing. It turned out I didn't really miss any of those things, even though it seemed hard at that time to let go of them. So when we practice this generosity, our attitude might be even more important than our gift and our motivation, and the attitude or motivation to wanting to do good. That will bear the greatest fruits, according to the suttas. And even if our motivation is not 100% pure, let's say we do want something in return for a gift, then the act of giving and the generosity is still wholesome because it might be just a mixed motivation of the generosity and the wanting in something in return, for example, and the attachment to what we're giving can also be something that comes up. So we can just be aware of that. We can just be aware of this whole mixed bag of motivations that might come into play when we are being generous. And like when we're calling a friend, that we feel the generosity of the listening ear, but we also feel some frustration because the friend's not listening to us or whatever it is, you know, so there can be really mixed stuff going on. And often there is a pure wish to help or to support. So we can also see that, and we see the, you know, the forms of a little bit of ego in there. And so just to be aware, not to make ourselves wrong, we will all have this mixed bag of motivations and attitudes. So this is more about exploring and learning from our attitudes and our motivations. And then in the background, wisdom can learn from it. Wisdom can arise from observing all these processes in the mind. So there are some real practical real life applications that we could use when we're practicing generosity, when we're practicing dana. And first of all, there's this monk, Unyanaponika, and he has 6 guidelines for giving. And they partly sum up what I've been talking about so far and a few new things. So the first guideline that he gives is to, before you give, reflect on your motivation. And what I just talked about. If we do that, then we can be aware of the impact of our motivation. The second guideline is to, whatever you give, to notice if there's any grasping or attachment, which kind of ties into the first one, I think. So the first one was to reflect on your motivation, and then the second one is about noticing any grasping or attachment towards what you're giving. The third guideline is the advice to give your gift in person and not to send the gift if it's not necessary. And this will not always be possible, of course, especially in these times where we are communicating and connecting through great distances all over the world. And for example, I just sent my sister a gift for her birthday. She's in Europe and I'm in the US, so I had to send it. I won't be able to give it in person. So we're just constrained in this way. So don't feel bad if you can't be generous in person. Your giving is still wholesome, and it's still a wholesome gift, even if we send it. So this is more of a advice if it's possible. The fourth guideline is to give while being mindful of what you're doing and what your state of mind is. So this seems obvious, of course. We always want to be mindful, whatever you're doing, so also when we're offering a gift. But when we offer a gift, we can be especially aware of what happens in heart and mind. Is there joy, contentment? Maybe there's the wanting in return thing or the attachment going on. And all of this is worthwhile noticing. Just the mindfulness. And the fifth guideline is to, after you've given, reflect on your intention and motivation again, and to rejoice in the act of giving. I will get back to the rejoicing, reflecting part in a little bit, because the Buddha has some direct advice about that. The sixth and last guideline is to make sure that the gift that you give is appropriate, and to be aware of the context that you are giving the gift in. And we don't want to offer something inappropriate. And one example is that monks are not allowed to eat or store any food after the midday meal. So if we were to give a monk food after the midday meal, it's not so appropriate, especially not when we're aware of this rule. If we're not aware, then we don't know, of course. But... So these are some straightforward guidelines that Unyanaponika gives us, reflecting beforehand, noticing if there's any grasping or attachment to what you give. Give the gift in person if possible and appropriate. Give while being mindful of your state of mind. Reflect afterwards on the act of giving and make sure that your gift is appropriate. And the Buddha talks about the reflecting part on her. Hayupak talks about many parts, but also about the reflection. And in one of the suttas, he mentions the following. A noble disciple recollects their own generosity. I am so fortunate, so very fortunate, among people full of the stain of stinginess. I live at home rid of the stain of stinginess, freely generous, open-handed, loving to let go, committed to charity, loving to give and to share. When a noble disciple recollects their generosity, their mind is not full of greed, hate, and delusion. At that time, their mind is unswerving. They've left behind greed. They're freed of it and have risen above it. End quote. I think this is a beautiful way of phrasing, like, that when we reflect on generosity, that the mind then during the reflection is free of greed, hate, and delusion for a moment or two. Because our Western minds might think like, oh, reflecting on our own generosity is an ego trip. But the Buddha actually points out the wholesomeness of this reflection. Because the type of reflection that the Buddha advises is not to tap ourselves on the back and say like, oh, I'm such a great person for being generous. But to reflect on how fortunate we are to be free of the stain of stinginess, to be freely generous, to be open-handed, to be loving to let go, to be committed to charity, to be loving to give and to share. These are the examples that he gives. So it's actually it can be a wholesome endeavor to reflect on our generosity. We can rejoice in it. So we have the 6 guidelines from Ujjanaponika, and we have this encouragement from both Ujjanaponika as well as the Buddha to reflect on our own generosity. And then just a couple more little advice things to apply the teachings on dana in our lives is just simply to start being generous. Of course, we are already generous in many ways, many of us. But maybe we can become more aware of it. We can be reflect on it. We can also reframe it. Like Jack Kornfield gives all these examples about the smile and the warmth we can express, or, you know, all these little things that can be generosity as well. So we can see like, oh, wait, that's actually also generous. That's also actually also an act of generosity. So you can become more aware of your own generosity in your life. Yeah, or maybe you start to become aware of like this impulse to let someone go in front of the line where you stand in, and you like, oh yeah, let's do that, because then that's the wholesomeness of generosity coming up now. Or you feel this impulse to call this friend who you know needs a listening ear, or you compliment someone or smile or whatever it is. We can be aware of generosity in our lives. And we can be aware of the many opportunities there might be coming up in our lives to be generous. And of course, the other side is that other people are also generous to us. So we might become aware of that more too. Like, we might be the recipient of many generous actions in our lives. And we can observe how this generosity that others offer us, how that impacts us. Is it something we can receive? Can we let it in? Do we feel grateful and joyful? Or is it really difficult to let in other people's generosity? And maybe that's an area of exploration for you and of investigation. And my strongest recommendation for cultivating generosity is to, if you decide to practice generosity, that you practice it where it brings you joy, where it brings joy to your heart and mind, and that it's not an obligation. Well, let me close with a similar statement by Gil Fronsdal. The Buddha emphasized the joy of giving. Dana is not meant to be obligatory or done reluctantly. Rather, dana should be performed when the giver is delighted before, during, and after giving. Thank you. So there's some time for sharing or questions. And feel free to unmute yourself. Yeah, great.
So two things. One of the things that I sometimes bring to mind, I think it was Joseph Goldstein talked about this and said a way that he worked with generosity was if he had any impulse to be generous, he tried to follow it. And I've used that sometimes because I'll have an impulse and then I'll go, well, and then I'll say, just do it, you know, which isn't, you know, the deep reflection thing that Niana Ponica was saying, but it was just another, I mean, then I can look at it afterwards or whatever too, you know. And the other thing is that I have had a real blessing in that I've lived my life very, very frugally. And at the same time, I've put a lot of money away. And so especially now I'm retired and I have a pension, which is a blessing. And then, you know, I've seen that money, which is in the stock market, grow. And I've always, I would like 20 years ago, I'd be like riding my bike around having these fantasies of like winning the lottery or winning a big Vegas jackpot or something. And part of the joy of it was thinking then I could feel really free about being generous. And, you know, I know that whole thing about, you know, thinking I can't be generous until I have that much. But it was really this, it has been this beautiful thing to feel that I am in this place where I can be freely generous. And then the stock market went down in the last, you know, year or so. And I noticed this tightening. Even though it's not, I mean, first of all, we're not talking about huge amounts of money, but and the difference is not a deal breaker. You know what I mean? So, but I noticed how suddenly both the just freely feeling like I can spend without worry anyway, not that I overly spend anyhow, but and to give, just feeling that tightening come and having to say, oh, don't want to go there. It's okay. You can still be generous. So it's been a very interesting exploration.
Yeah.
And thanks. Yeah. I really like these guidelines. That was great. I don't know that I've ever heard them before, but I wrote them down and I found them real helpful. Thank you. This is a great talk.
Awesome. Thanks. Yeah. And it's awesome reflections that you gave. I really like Joseph Goldstein as well, saying like, I just do it, you know? We can still have maybe a mini moment of reflection there, like feeling the generosity. Oh yeah, there's generosity and there's the act and there's the result or there's the reflection afterwards. It doesn't have to be like this long, elongated reflection even. So that's also, you know, interesting. And then, yeah, what you said when you were younger and then like, if I have a lot of money, then I can freely give. And it reminded me of the quote that I gave around that deity saying like, just give from the little you have, that's worth 1,000 times more than if you're stingy and you're rich, basically. So, you know, even if the stock market is down a little bit now, like, you know, there's still, you know, there still can be generosity, even if it's just a tiny bit. There are stories in the suttas of people who just offer their last clothes to the Buddha just because they wanna, you know, they only have one set of clothes and offered it to the Buddha, basically. That kind of story is like, yeah, that's super powerful. So yeah, just offer that too. Thanks for your sharing, Kate. Any other reflections or thoughts or questions that might have come up for you? Yeah,
I thing was really helpful is that the two advices that I have been keeping in mind. One is from Dipama. Dipama said, ask yourself frequently, what can you bring with you when you die? And actually, nothing, right? Nothing you can bring with us. And the second thing is, I heard one meditation teacher give this great advice. She said that for her, when people requested a donation from her, she said, you know, I used to think that maybe what I can give is too small. But she said, now she said she realized that it doesn't matter. It's just that even giving a small amount is better than not giving nothing. And, you know, yeah. And for me, what it means to me, I've been following the advice, and I see what it is it's an act of letting go. You know, it's not about an act of letting go and also thinking of even a little thing, it still makes the other person happy. Even, you know, I mean, it's just like a donation for political, you know, a campaign or anything. But I think what counts is that to show the support, you know, it's not, it has really so much, you know, how much I can give. But even just giving a little, I mean, you know, it makes me feel like I'm really using the grip of holding on to something. So,
yeah, thanks to me. That is true, yeah. It's about the letting go. And if, like, I've been in, like, years ago, I was in a situation where I had, like, really little amount of money. I had to, like, turn every little penny over, like, can I spend this or not? And I was already doing Buddhist things. And so, you know, I would go on retreat and I would be having the Dana talk and I'll be like, you know, I would be on a scholarship and I would be like, you know, I'm not sure. But then, like, just even just a tiny bit, you know, being able to give just a tiny bit, that's already like freeing, and just feel so wholesome, you know, and just, I would often feel like the urge to explain myself to the teachers. You're like, oh yeah, I'm sorry about my situation. But that wasn't even necessary. You know, people just, you know, understand it. And it's really about the letting go and the support you can give. Yeah. Yeah. These are very valuable lessons, especially when we don't have a lot of money or a lot of things to give. It seems to become even more pronounced, this teaching, or more like deep, because you're really playing your edge a lot there, if that's the case. And it also ties into how important it is to always look at, you know, what is doable for you. Like sometimes maybe, you know, you've years and years you've been giving to this good cause every month, and then your financial situation changes and you can't give monthly anymore. So you need to stop that. And like really listening to what your situation is like. Can you actually afford this? Is this actually a good idea? Is this wise? You know, because sometimes it might not be wise. I once heard about someone who, at the end of a retreat, basically gave all her savings to to the retreat, to the, you know, as donation for the teachers. And, you know, that, you know, out of generosity, that might feel really good. But then when you, a few months later, when you're home and you don't have any savings anymore, it might not be such a wise thing to do. So it's really about finding your edge, but not overdoing it. You know, it's really also looking at your boundaries and what's possible in your situation to offer, if we're talking about money or things, or even time, or, you know, even sometimes a smile might be too much if we feel super grumpy or something, you know. we might overdo it with a smile. So, yeah, it's really about boundaries as well. Yeah, all right. Go ahead.
But I notice sometimes the difficulty of not self-judging, you know, when you can give a lot or you make a gift and afterward you think, oh, that wasn't a very nice gift, or it's not enough, or it's not, I don't know. Sometimes I struggle with that, thinking even though the person is really happy, grateful, but I have this self-judgment that it's not enough.
Yeah, and that also happens, yeah. And then the important thing is to really be aware of this pattern that we have for ourselves, like the self-judgment pattern can be really deep. And there's a lot we can do with self-judgment. And one of the things, besides being aware of it and letting wisdom kind of, you know, learn from it, is also to do things like metta or compassion for ourselves, because that can really counteract that tendency. But sometimes it might not work because it's kind of like we're trying to push it away more than that, you know. So it's important to open up to it, as well as having self-compassion. Not to push the self-judgment away. That's what I'm trying to say. Not to push the self-judgment away by doing some compassion, like trying to get rid of it, but really out of the compassion for ourselves, or the kindness towards ourselves, could be an option to try. And like Dejani always says also, like the wisdom part of ourselves will always learn in the background if we're being mindful of these kind of patterns. Like he struggled with depression for a long time, and just this, like it took him years and years, but being aware of this pattern of depression, and at some point wisdom started to learn from it, but it took a long time. But this intention that wisdom will learn in the background, is knowing that helps too, even though it's not going to be over in in a few seconds, or even a few months or years maybe.
So maybe the curiosity is also to be patient with ourselves. No?
Yeah. We need a lot of patience on this path. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.